Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. We'll continue with the final chapter of Canto 3, chapter 33. Final words of Kapila Dev. We heard yesterday morning the first part of his reply. This is the second, and that's all he speaks, because he's given this whole Sankhya system. Devahuti, the beginning of this chapter, summarizes her appreciation for him and her appreciation for the process, and commits herself to follow it. And then we heard yesterday morning Kapila Dev saying, one who does so can achieve what she was asking for back in chapter 25. Freedom from being overly attached to, in this particular case, family life, but the temporary. The soul doesn't, we don't belong here. And yet we're attached to that which we don't belong to and brings us misery. We're attached to it. There's strong affinity for being the enjoyers of that which isn't enjoyable, not meant for us to be involved with. So even what we heard yesterday is, even within the same body. Does anybody remember the verse? Iha yasya harir dashe karmana manasa gira nikilap yativasta su jivan mukta su uchate. Emphasis was given that even in the same body, not like in the life hereafter, cross your fingers and hope you go to the good place instead of the bad place, or another birth in this world, the in-between world, the world of birth and death. So in this very lifetime, the constitutional position, the position of the soul after the soul gives up the material body and goes to the spiritual realm, gross and subtle body, and goes to the spiritual realm. That condition of the soul can be achieved in this lifetime. It's meant to achieve it in this lifetime, because if you don't achieve it in this lifetime, take birth again. Simple as that. Supposing you get to 98%. That's good. Take birth again to finish the other 2%. So it's meant to be completed in this lifetime. And it's, he emphasized, saying it twice, it's easy. It's not difficult. And that's relative. It's difficult because we're attached. There's this biblical saying, the spirit is willing, but the flesh is weak. We're attached to sense gratification. We're attached to the false sense of independence. We don't want to relinquish. So we want to carry on. You get the idea. Carry on our false sense of independence, at the same time be in the spiritual world. We want the kingdom of God without God. False sense of independence. So our natural position is dependent, and it's a nice position. It's the happy position. It's not a bad position at all. It's the position of ultimate happiness, and in the condition of perfect love, divine love. Nothing wrong with it. It's very wholesome. In relation to the personality of Godhead, the Supreme Beloved, who never exploits that dependent, because he's the subordinate and I'm the superior. It's just the opposite. It's transcendental loving exchange. just to take it further, the Supreme Lord is so kind that when somebody places themselves in that position, like this wonderful exchange with Maharaj Ambarish, the Supreme Lord tells Durvas Muni, I can't act independently. I place my fullness of my independence in a dependent position upon the desire of my devotee. I can't do anything outside of the desire of my devotee. So you have to go to Maharaj Ambarish, and if he says, it's done. My will is subordinate to his will. And the devotee does the same. My will is subordinate to his will. And everything gets worked out. So even with the emphasis, even in this lifetime, one who follows this process that's labeled as Sankhya, but we've discussed this before, I remember specifically here, Sankhya isn't just a philosophical system, it leads to meditation because that's Satya Yuga process, is meditation. And that meditation leads to unalloyed devotional service. The whole goal is unalloyed devotional service. So the means is appropriate for the age. The Sankhya is also appropriate in Kali Yuga and all the other yugas. It's a system of connecting with the Supreme, basically understanding what's what. And then you act according to proper knowledge of what's what. Who you are, what this world is, and who's the controller of both. And then you act accordingly. So that's yesterday. This morning is two verses. Short purport for the first one. We're covering texts ...11... that he ends his speaking, and then 12, Maitreya is summarizing what happens next. So text 11, Kapila Dev says, my dear mother, those who are actually transcendentalists certainly follow my instructions as I have given them to you. You may rest assured that if you traverse this path of self-realization perfectly, surely you shall be freed from fearful material contamination and shall ultimately reach me. Now there she is. They're before one another. She's already reached him. It's commented in the purport. He's speaking for the benefit of others. She's asking her question. He understands that she's asking her question for the benefit of others, like us. And that's what great souls do. They act for the benefit of others. She's showing by example, and then the next verse, he's showing by example. That's what great souls do. They don't need anything. They don't need to attain anything. They're already there. But they show by example. We hear. Mother, persons who are not conversant with this method of devotional service certainly cannot get out of the cycle of birth and death. We have some people practically sitting on the porch. Could we, like, everybody move forward a little bit, please? And then the people that are out there on the porch can come on inside. Can you come up a little bit? Oh, maybe there's not room. Okay, there is room. So those of you that are out on the porch, come on in. I'll read the translation again, and it's a very short purport. Kapila Dev says, last statement in the chapter, this whole section. My dear mother, those who are actually transcendentalists certainly follow my instructions as I have given them to you. You may rest assured that if you traverse this path of self-realization perfectly, surely you will be freed from fearful material contamination and shall ultimately reach me. Mother, persons who are not conversant with this method of devotional service certainly cannot get out of the cycle of birth and death. Short purport. Material existence is full of anxiety, and therefore it is fearful. When it gets out of this material existence, automatically becomes free from all anxieties and fear. One who follows the path of devotional service enunciated by Lord Kapila is very easily liberated. I mean, very tight, concise statement. The word in the verse that Prabhupada is focusing on is abhayam. One who follows this path is certainly becomes abhayam. Bhaya means fear. Abhaya. And Prabhupada was given by his father Abhay. Abhay charande. Abhay. One who is without fear. And without fear means you have protection. The circumstances around may be fearful. There may be cause or provocation for fear. Or in the purport, he says this fear is the consequence of anxiety. You know, anxiety is there's uncertainty. What's going to happen next? And therefore fearful. But we don't need to worry about what's going to happen next if there's shelter. Two examples. Prabhupada gives the example of a small boy walking down the street holding the hand of his father, and he's feeling safe. And here comes a big dog, woof woof, showing his teeth. Rawr. And the small boy looks at his father, holding his father's hand, remains fearless. Why? My father has always protected me. I don't need to worry about this fierce animal. My father will protect me. So he remains free from fear. Although there's cause for disturbance, he remains undisturbed. It's a nice understanding. It's very important for us that live in this world and have temporary bodies, and the subtle one too, the subtle mind, and we don't know what's next, and here comes something or 10 somethings, and there's trepidation. So that the Sanskrit word in Bhagavad Gita and elsewhere is dhira means undisturbed. The nice little phrase in the prayers to the six Goswamis that begins Dhir Adhira Jana Priyo Priyakaro. The Goswamis, six Goswamis of Vrindavan, were dear to both the Dhira and the Adhira, those who are just easily disturbed and those who are undisturbed, the ruffians and the gentle. It's translated that way. You know, bad people and good people. They were looked up to by both because they had no interest in anything temporary. So even people that were attached to the temporary, they had nothing to fear from the Goswamis because they weren't interested in those same things they're interested in. They were true shelter. And the opposite, there isn't shelter where there's persons who are attached, so that this is a fearful place. You don't never know when you're going to be harassed or attacked or something or other. With or without provocation. So dhira means This is Prabhupada's explanation. I like very much. Dhira means one who is undisturbed, so Prabhupada says. To remain undisturbed when there's no cause for disturbance is not something wonderful. But when there's cause for disturbance and one remains undisturbed, that's something wonderful. That is dhira. So how is it you remain undisturbed when there's cause for disturbance is you have shelter. It's one of the symptoms of surrender. Krishna is my protector. Rakshishati vishvaso. Raksha means protection. So the Lord is my protector. So the small boy holding his father's hand, my father is my protector. Another anecdotal, I've said this many times, but it's a vivid visual impression. One morning I was to give a verse in the Bhagavatam about the purport is explaining anatha and sa-natha. Natha means Lord. So one who is sa-natha is one who has a Lord or a protector, and anatha is one who doesn't. And, you know, the recommendation is take shelter of the protector and be protected. So I had read the verse before the class. I was going for a japa walk, still before the sun had come up, in at a university in India. And there's these big walkways and on the campus, and those of you from India, you know there's a common phenomenon, street dogs, people that are anatha, they don't have a master, homeless dogs, no protector. So they live in packs, and you walk by their territory, and one dog goes, woof, woof, and then all the other dogs chime in, woof, 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 get, you know, stay away from our territory. Where dogs are territorial, so they're protecting their territory. So that particular morning, I knew where the dogs were, and, you know, I would go way over on the other side of the sidewalk so they would know I'm not impinging on their territory. And they would raise their head, but they wouldn't woof because they saw I was respecting their territory. And then I passed by and they put their head back down and go to sleep because it's nighttime. So that one particular morning, there was a professor who was also going for a morning walk. And he had, in one hand he had a cane, and in his other hand he had a leash, and on the other end of the leash was a little white poodle, like a nice meal for those dogs. So when the professor was going by, he didn't acknowledge their territory, he just walked right by. And so one raised his head and said, woof, woof. And the other dog said, woof, woof. And then they stood up. And they started charging towards that little poodle. And the professor, I watched, the professor, very calmly, with one arm, he picked up the poodle, put the poodle under his arm. And with the other hand, he held the stick and shook the stick at the dogs. And I watched the dog. The dogs looked at the stick, they looked at each other, looked at the stick, looked at each other, shrugged their shoulders and went back and lied down. And the poodle was, his little tail was wagging like this, and he was licking the cheek of the professor. Sanatha, he was protected. He wasn't fearful. A little guy compared to like a whole pack of dogs. Arr, with the, you know, their teeth showing and, you know, the back of their hair and their neck going, we're ready to pounce on you. Fearless. Now, if a dog can be deer, I guess we can be too, right? We just have to have shelter in a worthy place of shelter. And the Supreme Lord, in any circumstance, is the worthy place of shelter. That's one of the six angas or limbs of surrender, is the Lord is my protector. And one that doesn't have that protection, there is anxiety when a cause for disturbance comes, and then in turn, one becomes fearful. You know, and fear leads to defense. One of the four animal propensities, and the strongest of them, is defending. So one lives an animal life if one doesn't have shelter. It's just default. And the converse, if you live a godly life, you leave animal life behind. You don't need those things. I mean, you may, like we said yesterday, you put a lock on the door. You don't walk across an expressway when the cars are moving at full speed thinking, Krishna is my protector, I want to get to the other side. We don't act foolishly. We don't force Krishna to jump in front of the moving traffic and stop all the cars as we cross the expressway. We don't act foolishly. We act in a mood of service to Krishna, but in doing so, we recognize it's not our effort, it's Krishna that's the protector. Not our little brain and a little calculated plan that I'm going to be protected from some danger. We make some arrangements in service to Krishna. He's not speaking here about, someone comes in the door with a gun in their hand or that kind of fear. Just material existence. The uncertainties of what's next. It's like the question yesterday about planning goals or some other discussions about planning career and what's the next step. And, there's uncertainty. And that uncertainty can create anxiety, or, the common word is stress. And then fear. What if I make the wrong decision? And so forth. So we don't say it again. We're not capricious. We don't throw our hands up in the air and say, que sera, sera. You've heard that phrase? Whatever will be, will be. Que sera, sera. It's European. Forget which language. Whatever will be, will be. So we're not foolish like that. We consider, weigh things, consult. We have to make decisions, and we make decisions. The decisions are to the best of our capacity, and we depend on Krishna, and if Krishna indicates to us that wasn't the right decision, we're ready to change the decision. Not attached. When you go a certain distance down the road, you can't just change. You have to carry through. But we're tuned in to the Krishna channel and ready to hear the signal from Krishna. Turn left or turn right. In some cases, you can't just say, I don't know left or right, so I'm just going to stand still. The wheel of time is moving, and some decisions need to be made as life moves on. So when there's shelter, then there's freedom from the cause of disturbance, thus anxiety, and then fear. That's the emphasis of in the purport here. And the final sentence is saying again, one who follows the path of devotional service enunciated by Lord Kapila is very easily liberated. So, how easy is it to follow the path of devotional service given by Kapila that then makes it very easy to be liberated? The outcome is easy. The application may be where it's a little difficult. And mainly it's because we're lazy. I mean, we're lazy for spiritual well-being. We may be less lazy for material well-being. We invest so much time and energy in. Let's just take education, for example. How many hours, collectively in this room, how many hours of academic study have we all done? Tons. Go through the ceiling. So many hours. And correspondingly, what about our eternal benefit? It's probably substantial, but doesn't compare to the other one. And on a pan scale, which is more important? Not like, anyway, the ultimate must be calculated into how we parse up our time, how we invest our time. And even as we're doing the temporary, it should be pursuant of the eternal as best we can to our capacity. That's human life. That's the training that Srimad Bhagavatam is offering to us through this nice exchange with Devahuti. So now again, he's speaking to Devahuti as if she's not at that stage of perfection of devotional service. She is. But he understands he's speaking to her for our benefit. Similar to Krishna speaking to Arjuna for our benefit. And so that's nice. She's taking the position of a person that's like us, or, you know, directionally like us, where we're confused or not so clear, and she's now becoming clear. That's the exchange, and the language is appropriate. And one other last, I said it yesterday, but it's worth saying it again. Kapila Dev is known specifically. When you hear Kapila Dev, what is it that's special about Kapila Dev? He taught Sankhya philosophy, or the Sankhya Yoga system. And the Sankhya philosophy or Sankhya Yoga system is mentioned in Bhagavad Gita, also chapter 2. So it's a Satya Yuga teaching, but it's also in Dwarapa Yuga and intended for the persons of Kali Yuga. It spans yugas, and it leads to bhakti. So reference again and again is the process of devotional service enunciated by me, or enunciated by Kapila. So take it in, understand it, take it in, live by it, and very easily, if you live by it and do it in the language here perfectly, liberation is already included. You need to strive for liberation. Just strive for following the devotional service process that he gives. Understand it carefully and apply it. And then the next is Maitreya. Maitreya is speaking to Vidura, and he's explaining this whole exchange. Maitreya said, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Kapila, after instructing his beloved mother, took permission from her and left his home. Doesn't say, you know, immediately after saying these words, he said goodbye. It's just points, it's not details. His mission having been fulfilled. Purport. The mission of the appearance of the Supreme Personality of Godhead in the form of Kapila was to distribute the transcendental knowledge of Sankhya philosophy, which is full of devotional service. Having imparted that knowledge to his mother, dash, and through his mother to the world, dash, Kapila Dev had no more need to stay at home. So, he took permission from his mother and left. Apparently, he left home for spiritual realization, although he had nothing to realize spiritually, because he himself is the person to be spiritually realized. Therefore, this is an example set by the Supreme Personality of Godhead while acting like an ordinary human being so that others might learn from him. He could, of course, have stayed with his mother, but he indicated that there was no need to stay with the family. It is best to remain alone
as a brahmachari sannyasi or vanaprastha and cultivate Krishna consciousness throughout one's whole life. Those who are unable to remain alone are given license to live in household life with a wife and children, comma, not for sense gratification, but for cultivation of Krishna consciousness. So, few things. Primary thing is he's setting an example. It's all very interesting. Kardama Muni left home. Kardama Muni, before he was married, was following the instruction of his father. Who was Kardama Muni's father? Lord Brahma. He was a direct son of Lord Brahma. So the instruction was, please assist me in creating good praja, good filling up this universe that I just created with good living beings. So off he went to qualify himself to do that by performing austerities for tens of thousands of years. And while in the forest, his devotion, it wasn't just become married and have children. It was, he was a devotee. And so he perfected his devotion to such an extent that Lord Vishnu came, even before he was married, telling him, I know what your desire is. Your desire is to fulfill the instruction of your father, and you also have a desire to have me as your son. So the answer is yes, I'll become your son. But for me to become your son, you have to have a wife. And here's some good news. In 2 days, your wife is going to come. Just say yes. So I'm Bhuvamanu's daughter. And so the condition was, when Swayambhuva came, was, I'll accept your daughter as my wife. She's very, very qualified. Lord Vishnu told me that she'd be as qualified as I am, so I just accept Lord Vishnu's word for it. And when there's a son that's of age to take care of your daughter or my wife, then the precondition is I'll leave home and go to the Vanaprastha stage. So that's what happened. They married and so many things, and 9 daughters and Lord Kapila, their son. So when Lord Kapila became of age to look after Devahuti, he left. That's a puzzle. Why did he leave? To do what? To meditate on his son, Lord Vishnu. Because he's a devotee. He's a pure devotee. A pure devotee in Vatsalya Rasa, in parental affection, and there's his son. It's like, Nanda Maharaj going to the forest to meditate on Krishna or something like that. It's interesting. Or it seems contradictory. But he was setting an example. He didn't need to. He was already perfect. But he was setting an example. Devahuti is setting an example. And here in this verse, Kapila Dev setting an example. He didn't need to go anywhere to become self-realized or to become detached or something like that. But he's setting an example. Similar to the message of, I'm sure you're familiar with this from Bhagavad Gita, Krishna checkmated Arjuna. Arjuna said, I want to leave the battlefield. And Krishna said, no. If you neglect your duty, neglect of your duty, that will incur sin. But if you perform your duty, you won't incur sin. So then the next is, what if I become self-realized? Then I won't have to perform my duty. And then Krishna said, even if you're self-realized, you'll do your duty because you have to set an example for others. Perform your duty. You're locked in. No escape. Had to perform his duty. To set an example. So we're not in the perfect stage. We don't just do something to set an example. We do something because we need the purification. And when that stage of purification comes, we'll continue to perform duty. Just like in the raga bhakti execution, one performs duties. Although one isn't obliged to perform duties, one performs duties, internally cultivating higher devotional rasa and sentiments, but externally carrying on as if one isn't at that stage. To set an example, the exception, according to Nectar of Devotion, is there may be something that conflicts with that internal cultivation, and in that case there's no fault by neglect, but otherwise there's example setting for the benefit of people in general. Then another point in the purport is a practical asset for spiritual life is not being entangled in family life. Now, not being entangled in family life should not be taken up based upon aversion, because aversion is the flip side of attachment. One who is like, commonly, there's exception, but one who is strongly averse to something, commonly, often, it means there's attachment to that something, like overly opposed and averse. It indicates attachment. And someone is trying to compensate for that attachment by overly averse. It's kind of like, you know, there are not too many brahmacharis around anymore. It's like a nearly extinct species, but there was a time when there was lots of brahmacharis, and then the brahmacharis were very disrespectful to women. And sannyasis, very disrespectful to women. And, you know, it was very unpleasant, even for men that weren't so averse. But certainly for the women, it was not nice. But it was out of protection, because of the weakness of their detachment, to put up a big fence and be averse and disrespectful. It's not Krishna consciousness being disrespectful to anyone. So a more mature stage is not be attached, but not be averse, and walk the path of bhakti. Mentioned this yesterday. It's one of the verses of Krishna speaking to Uddhava in the 11th canto, Uddhava Gita. An eligible candidate for bhakti, nice verse, is one who is not too attached, not too detached. Because the two detached, easily one becomes impersonal. And too attached, you're materialistic. So on one side is impersonal, the other side is materialistic. It's hard to have that person go forward. So not too much attached, not too detached. But the emphasis in this, short emphasis in this purport, is the position of detachment is beneficial. If it's not out of aversion, if it's actually suited to one's nature, it's a good position to execute Krishna consciousness from. It's one of the standard ashrams, brahmachari ashram, sannyas ashram, no involvement. And vanaprastha, detachment from the worldly aspects of husband and wife, and going in the direction of increasing austerities and visiting holy places and deepening one's study of the scripture, and not entangled in all the complexities of comfortable, so-called comfortable home and all that stuff. It's advised, being advised specifically here. So Kapila Dev, we don't hear anything about Kapila Dev's internal potency, you know, like Sita Ram and Radha Krishna and Lakshmi Narayan. We don't hear Kapila and who. He's Brahmachari. His whole life is Brahmachari. That's him. Doesn't mean he doesn't have internal potency. He's an expansion of Lord Vishnu. But he's setting a particular standard or example. So he leaves. And it's conducive. Prabhupada's point. It's conducive for a spiritual life. Not out of, this fourth time, not out of aversion, but when it's suitable for that individual, some individual to be not involved in family life, then it's helpful. It's to be encouraged, as long as it's not artificial or out of aversion. One should then be able to assess what is one's nature and then act accordingly. So, the last point is Prabhupada's comment in the final sentence of the purport about household life. And household life, if one is not, if it's not suitable, one of those other three, brahmachari, grihastha, vanaprastha, sannyas, excuse me, brahmachari, vanaprastha, sannyas, if that's not so appropriate, if it's a better position for one to be in for spiritual development, then one accepts household life and family and so forth. The emphasis then is, but not for sense gratification, but for cultivation of Krishna consciousness. If that's a more suitable place for one to cultivate Krishna consciousness, and commonly that is the case, the exception is the other, you know, statistically within society, not just because, you know, within society people are very materialistic, but even in where there's elevated spiritual culture, in Satya Yuga, obviously there has to be householders because there's children. So, that ashram, the grihastha ashram, is for cultivation of Krishna consciousness within certain guidelines and standards, God-given guidelines and standards, how to utilize our body and mind to the best, in the best method in service to Krishna, to cultivate Krishna consciousness. Prabhupada included a number of things in this little purport. So we'll stop there, see if there's some discussion or comments from anyone.
The Lord is speaking to Kardamani and telling that you are deserving, you fulfill, you will get a suitable wife.
Okay.
In that section, Srila Prabhupada writes in the purport about shelter, taking shelter, and he mentions specifically about in all, every material circumstance, one should pray to the Lord and the outcome will come properly. The soul mentions it. I want to understand it, how to apply properly. Because 7 years ago, like 5 years ago or something, I was praying to God for every small thing. I want to go to this program on time. I want to not get caught by the police in driving speed. So, every little thing. And then that time...
You got caught by the police. No.
That time I understood that I'm treating Krishna like a servant, instead of taking shelter of him. So I want to understand this properly so I can take proper shelter. What does it mean in this sense? How to properly take shelter in all every material circumstance?
Okay. Two things. One is something that Prabhupada gave us as a protection from the seeing the Lord as one's order supplier was, if you so desire. Specifically, that was in relation to when Prabhupada had very bad health. There were two recommendations in our temples all around ISKCON to have 24-hour kirtan when his health was really bad. And then the second was, he gave us a prayer. My dear Lord Krishna, if you so desire, please protect the health of our spiritual master, Srila Prabhupada, so he can continue to guide us in our spiritual life. Something to that effect. Second is, there's categories of prayers, but very common, and almost in all cases, when there's a series of prayers, there's some request. This is now our Acharya's analyzing prayer. There's some request. Now, when there's some request, it doesn't necessarily mean, I'm seeing the Lord as my order supplier. It certainly can mean, I'm seeing the Lord as my order supplier. So, the thing to evaluate, I'm responding to your question, the thing to evaluate is the consciousness behind the request. Is the consciousness behind the request the mood of shelter-taking, or is the mood behind the request to see the Lord as one's order supplier? It's subtle, and you know the mind doesn't always discern properly. We can easily deceive ourselves, or to speak of others, by not properly understanding. So therefore, it takes buddhi. It takes some spiritual intelligence, which Krishna gives, and otherwise we're going to look at things with material intelligence and want to make ourselves look good. Or even the other way, but want to make ourselves look bad because we like feeling bad about ourselves. Some people are like that. They can't feel good about themselves. They have to feel bad about themselves. So it takes some spiritual intelligence to discern whether the request is in a shelter-taking mood. I'm your servant. You're the master. I'm taking shelter of you in order to carry out my service. I'm not independent. I require your protection. And then the other is like a doormat. It's like, aside from your prayer to Krishna, we may have some situation in our interpersonal dealings, certainly in a family or within the community, and we may ask somebody something. And it can be utilitarian or it can be devotional. Depends on the consciousness behind the request. So the seat of consciousness is important. I want to be in Krishna's service. And being in Krishna's service, I must see him as the protector, not the order supplier. Yes. Speak loud enough so they can hear in the back.
When we look at ourselves, we always see a lot of problems inside, like lust, anger, and a lot of problems.
Sure.
So, in spite of having all of these things, still how we can feel good about ourselves?
Can you hear in the back? Should I say it again? You got it?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, it's not feel good about yourself. That's not the goal. The goal is to feel I'm striving to become properly situated in my relationship with Krishna. And the byproduct of that is I can feel good about myself. But, it's not the goal. The goal is the relationship with Krishna And I'm striving to strengthen that relationship with Krishna. Now, if that is not at the center, then it becomes I'm at the center, and then it's feeling good about myself becomes important. But that's even you feel good about yourself, you're not in the right position because Krishna is missing. And wait a while, and you're not feeling good about yourself anymore. Take Donald Trump as an example. He may feel very good about himself. Hare Krishna. You have something? No. Anyone? Yes.
Sometimes, when I'm in the devotional service, I think I'm serving the Lord in my relationships, while I caught up myself serving their ego or their material. I'm gratifying
yes.
their senses.
Mixed.
How I get mixed up.
That's our position. Just the honest appraisal is we're mixed. Not just you. Until one comes to the position of Shuddha Bhakti, it's mixed. Now, how do you deal with that? Just going back to don't feel bad about yourself. And don't feel, well, it's okay because that's where everybody else is. Misery loves company, right? So, not like that either. It's just that we had a whole 2 Gita Nagari retreats ago, a whole theme was acceptance and progress. So the acceptance part is mixed. And even being, specific and clear as possible about where the mix is. And it's not, for the purpose of feeling bad about yourself. It's for the purpose of just being real about where you are. And then be clear about what the goal is. And then being clear of what's a doable step, sustainable, doable, realistic, for me, step in the direction of the goal. And then you do that. I'm not hiding from myself or from others the mix. And it's not there's not a race. I'm not competing against the person next to me or the person on the other side of the room or the person, some other person. It's not about competition. It's your relationship with Krishna and striving for that stage of what the goal is. Now, easier said than done, because we're raised, and it's part of the abundant material conditioning that we compete. From little kids, taught to compete. And it's win or lose. Without details. In social, academic, you name it. Athletic, it's win, lose. And you got to play the game. And if you don't play the game, you're weird. You lose. So how to be Krishna conscious when that's the atmosphere? That's the abundant modality of how everyone behaves. You just, I don't like that modality. I'm going to step out and be independently thoughtful and not compete against or compete with others. I'm going to be in my relationship with Christ. So like that. And then be in the, as much as you can, take association of others that are like-minded, and you're not competing against them. They're assisting you and you're assisting them in that process of going from the mixed to towards the unmixed. That's a friend. That's a real friend. There's a nice little saying. I scanned it because I liked it so much and keep it on my desk. A friend is, remind me, Shankadari, and I'll send it to you. You can circulate it. A friend is one who knows who you are. They accept who you are. They know where you've been. They know your shortcomings. And yet still they're gently encouraging you to grow. That's a friend. You don't hide anything from them. You don't conceal it. Posture yourself differently. And they're not judging you, and they're not controlling you or manipulating you or taking advantage of your weaknesses. They're just, they know, and they're helping, accepting, helping you grow. That's what it's very helpful to have a friend. And, you know, in this world, it's very special to have a friend. Because many people, they're not really friends. They're friends in the other sense. They help you compete. And, you know, stay in a mixed position. That's my friend. And something happens, you go complain to your friend about this other person that was, etc., etc. That's not a friend. In the true sense. And then persons that are example setters, and look to those example setters, and you may not have some direct communication with them, but that's something that can help you go from the mixed towards the unmixed. The resources are there for one who wants it. So your question is, I want it. So there's some resources. Self-honesty is a good starting place, an essential starting place. Don't be too harsh. Don't be too liberal. Just be real. And then pick an area that you feel it's workable. I can work on this, and I stay fixed on working on this, and some stuck position becomes unstuck, and then I'm moving. That's nice. Celebrate, then take another step. Keep moving. Cultivating. Anukulyena Krishna Anushilana Bhaktir Uchite. That's what we should do. Yes?
When I was on the point of prayers, I have heard that even all the prayers in the Bhagavad, it's glorification and then making the request. So it's just the request part comes very, very easily, but the mind becomes blank if it's like, if the glorification on that aspect and making any prayers. What is the proper way to pray or how to
Well, two. Standard prayers are educational and enter into the spirit of those standard prayers, not just mechanically read or recite them. Try to appreciate the mood. There's many. Bhaktivinoda Thakur's songs are fantastic. So many. So standard prayers. Narottam Das Thakur and Raghunath Das Goswami, Manashiksha. Many standard prayers. Rupa Goswami's standard prayers. Shelter of the Holy Name, for example. And then, you know, similar to this other, second part, similar to this other, I recognize that I'm mixed, and the mixed causes this blockage, and so let me take a step in the direction of, so search within, and then not for the appreciation of others, but for your own edification and purification, what's in your heart, and say that. It can be something even very simple. And but from your heart, then it has power and it'll grow. Parameshwari, you usually have something.
You were talking about not to be more attached and not to be detached in the
body. No, not exactly. Not too much and not too much. Okay.
Being averse in the relationships, and it's so much concern about that person. I don't know what is my service to that person. How can I assist? Because no, it's so clear for me that no, it's going into a little wrong direction.
Well, I think you know the answer. Prayer. Don't intrude. Respect that, you know, the space that they are in at the moment, and don't invite yourself in when you're not invited. Respect. That's the place they're in. And then a third is just, if, at least internally, like prayer, but continue to be respectful and unconditionally kind. Another way of saying the same thing is something that I learned from Borijan. I learned a lot from Borijan, but one of the things I learned from him is, not always, but there's some circumstances of life where a situation is between an individual and Krishna, and leave it up to Krishna. Don't try to play Krishna's role. In some cases, that's what it is. That's what's going on, is a relationship between the individual and Krishna, and Krishna's working with them in Krishna's way. Now, if there's a place for you to be in service to Krishna, in service to this particular individual on Krishna's behalf, then it would be nice if Krishna can give you that indication. And otherwise, respecting it's between that individual and Krishna. And Krishna will do what Krishna is going to do. Unless it's intended for you to have some role on as an instrument. The phrase that you've heard me use is detached caring. So those are some elements. Assuming the person that you're speaking about is a devotee, that means they're carrying bhakti. And that's, let me respect that in the individual. And because of that bhakti, there's a relationship with Krishna. And Krishna will take care of the situation. I don't have to take care of the situation. It's not, I don't care, but it's I'm not the controller. Their destiny is their choosing. And more likely, if there some openness arises to say, I'd like some help, if you're in this detached mood, then more likely someone is going to come. You're an exemplary person, showing kindness, but not out of, you know, not more than that, not more than the, you know, not being an uninvited guest in the space that they want to keep private. Depending upon the relationship, you may say something, but not in it, you know, not more than that. Appropriate for the receptivity of the person. Strive to be exemplary. That's the that's power. To where you can then be of help if there's some reaching out, a willingness. Yes.
When you're in that mood,
and the result doesn't go the way you expected it to go.
Yeah.
You're thinking, A, is it because I didn't put in my best effort, or B, is it really because you said you really want that to happen or something better? You're sort of confused. Which one? How do you deal with that?
Let me think about it just a moment. Well, one way to think about it is wait and see, because your expectation that you, the way that you thought it would go or was wishing for it to go, may come later. At Krishna's clock may be different than yours. And there may be some multiple other steps between, you know, today and tomorrow. Like, you know, other people being involved in the scenario of working things out that, you know, you can't see because you're not omniscient, but Krishna can see, and there's other steps and other people. And a second, you know, how do you handle or process a situation like that? You can pray to Krishna. Was I casual and neglectful and careless? Is that the message? You know, you're looking for intelligence in the matter of the question you raised. It didn't come out, and now you're the question number two. And by having that question number two, it's not necessarily uncomfortable. It's part of maturing. That is to say, a mature devotee, an experienced devotee, devotee meaning someone that doesn't want to control or be the enjoyer of a circumstance, they want to be Krishna's instrument. So experience and experience and experience and experience is a good teacher. So it can be just part of your life's experience of being introspective in that way, learning in the next situation, it may be better to be a little more or a little less or a little something different. But it's just part of intelligence that comes with experience and sincere desire. So it's part of the learning process for you. But asking question number two will help you get the intelligence. You don't ask the question, you're not going to get an answer. Or you can get the answer, you won't even know it because you're already asking the question. So it's good to ask the question, and it's similar to asking the prayer, Krishna, was I neglectful, or did I do the right thing in the right way? You're seeking intelligence, and Krishna's promise is he'll give the intelligence, but he gives intelligence to the qualified person. So that's where you look. And then going back to this other, well, there's a mix. So my responsibility is to address the mixed part. And that's exactly your question. Did I apply myself adequately and properly or not? But the outcome may be all, the experience says, outcome may be altogether like not even on the same target, what to speak of the bullseye of your target, maybe something else altogether is Krishna's intention. That's nice. Krishna's the controller, not me. So it's this detached, caring dynamic once again, and at the same time trusting in Krishna and striving to be the instrument of Krishna. Because life circumstances are always different, and I'm an imperfect being, how do I know how to apply myself as the instrument. But you're seeking indication from Krishna. And that's the right position to be in. So, conclusion. Don't leave Krishna out of the picture. Krishna's well-wishing of the other person, or Krishna's favoring the other person because you're Krishna's devotee and you're favoring the other person, so Krishna's kindness goes to the other person, but in an appropriate manner. So that the real variable is then our own purity. So focus on that. And then you'll more likely have an answer to your question when purity is there.